welcome to this episode of CCYSC AWAS. My name is Elizabeth Dillenberg, and I'm an assistant professor of history at The Ohio State University at Newark. This episode focuses on a new book called Children and Youth as Subjects, Objects, Agents, Innovative Approaches to Research Across Space and Time. The volume, which is published by Palgrave Macmillan, focuses on a broad interdisciplinary range of approaches to the study of childhood and youth, which together help illuminate how childhood and youth have been conceptualized and experienced across different time periods and locations. In this episode, you'll hear more about how this edited volume came about and the research circle that it grew out of. You'll also hear from some of the contributors to this volume. I hope you enjoy the discussion of this interesting new book. Welcome to our listeners. I'm Dr. Elizabeth Lefebvre, Assistant Professor of Education at Bethel University in Minnesota, and one of the chapter contributors to the book, Children and Youth as Subjects, Objects, Agents. I'm joined here today by Dr. Fran Vavris and Dr. Karen Brown. Welcome.
Thanks.
So to get us started, would you mind both introducing yourselves briefly for our listeners?
Thank you, Beth. I'm Karen Brown, and I am connected to this edited volume and research circle in two different ways. I direct the Interdisciplinary Center for the Study of Global Change, also known as ICGC, and ICGC has been the platform for the interdisciplinary research circle that produced the book we're talking about today. ICGC's academic mission is to foster and support a community of scholars interested in global social justice. I also participate in the research circle in my own scholarly capacity. I'm a political scientist, and my primary areas of interest are in gender and international relations, and children and youth in global policy. So that's how I became connected as a scholar to the group. I became interested in children and international relations with an early research project on international children's rights related to family violence, and my more recent work looks at where girls appear in global development policy. And it's that project that I've brought to the edited volume.
Thank you. And my name is Fran Vavris, as Beth noted, and I am a professor in the program in Comparative and International Development Education at the University of Minnesota. I'm also the associate chair of the Department of Organizational Leadership, Policy, and Development, and an affiliated faculty member with ICGC. In addition, I'm one of the three co-authors of the new book, Children and Youth as Subjects, Objects, Agents, along with my colleagues, Dr. Deborah Levinson at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs and Professor MJ Maines in the Department of History at the University of Minnesota. I've been working with children and youth in Tanzania for about the past 25 years, first focused on girls' schooling at the secondary level in Tanzania, and then more recently involved in a longitudinal study looking at children's lives from the end of primary school through young adulthood. And I continue to be very interested in the lives of children and youth in the Global South.
Well, thank you both again for being here. So by way of context, we're going to focus in this interview on the backstory for the book, Children and Youth as Subjects, Objects, Agents. And I should note for our listeners, we often call this YASOA in the group. So you might hear the book or the group referred to that way. But it actually grew out of the research collaborative hosted by ICGC at the University of Minnesota, which Karen, you mentioned. So tell me, how did this research collaborative actually come to be?
So as I mentioned, ICGC focuses on questions of global social justice and the Global South. And in addition to that, we also emphasize interdisciplinarity in our academic work. And so we have partner colleges and partner faculty from across the campus, six different colleges and schools across the humanities, the social and natural sciences. And so we really try to support work that focuses on interdisciplinary perspectives. And it became clear some time ago that children and youth are central to all of these questions we look at concerning global social justice. We've seen a lot of interest in this area and felt that it was really important to include this kind of analysis in our work. We've been fortunate to have funding from the University of Minnesota's Office of the Vice President for Research to help us support interdisciplinary scholarship related to these global questions through a series of research circles that are led by ICGC-affiliated faculty members like Fran and others who have applied for this funding.
And perhaps I will add some more details about this project. So in 2013, Deborah Levinson and I submitted a proposal for a collaborative research circle to ICGC, and we were very interested in starting a collaborative circle to bring together an interdisciplinary group of graduate students, particularly doctoral students and faculty from across the university, to explore the lives of children and youth in the Global South. Deborah and I had known each other for about 5 years at this point, and she's an economist and demographer, and my areas are in educational anthropology, critical development studies, and comparative education. So we understood already the value of working across disciplines, and we also had this common interest in the study of children and youth. So we wrote this proposal hoping to have opportunities for workshops, writing projects, but not yet thinking about a book, and bringing speakers to campus who might engage with both faculty and graduate students. It was a very successful project, I believe. So then in 2017, MJ Maines joined our group in writing a second proposal for the continuation of this collaborative research circle. And in that proposal, we included the idea of a series of workshops that would lead to an edited book. So it was really in 2017 that we began to think about and work toward the book that has recently been published.
So as one of those former PhD students at the University of Minnesota and one of your advisees, Fran, I know you were really intentional about involving graduate students and creating space for up-and-coming scholars in this, both in this collaborative, and I also know, Karen, that's a big part of ICGC's mission. So tell me a little bit more about that.
ICGC really has a focus on graduate students, supporting graduate students and their work. And that really lies at the heart of everything we do at the center. We have a core graduate fellowship program. We have academic programs for graduate students. And we also require each research circle that is proposed to involve graduate students, ICGC fellows who we support, and also students beyond ICGC. So we really value and think it's crucial to have this intergenerational partnership between faculty and graduate students. And ICGC has been a space that where we've tried to foster those kinds of partnerships. And so we see the research circles as one very important way to help build those relationships between emerging scholars and more senior scholars.
Yes, and I would only add that, as Karen pointed out earlier, childhood and youth studies has become more central in a number of fields. And so we thought that as more senior scholars, we might be able to support graduate students who want to pursue childhood and youth studies, whether it be in history or education or demography. We also wanted to make sure that we could give students feedback on dissertation proposals or conference presentations, grant proposals from an interdisciplinary perspective. And that was one of the goals of YOSOA from the very beginning. And finally, we thought it would be ideal if we could help to facilitate introductions and conversations between visiting scholars and graduate students at the University of Minnesota, both to enrich their doctoral research and for, you know, future relationships and collaborations beyond graduate school.
So thinking about this volume specifically, you've talked a bit about the connections that have been made more generally, but how did the scholars in this particular volume come together, and what's really unique about this collection?
Sure. So many of the scholars have connections to the University of Minnesota. Quite a few of us are faculty at the university. Some were graduate students when they were working on their chapters, and now they have graduated and become faculty members or are working in other sectors. And several are alumni of different departments at the university. Some of the other contributors were invited speakers for the YASOA speaker series. And those were people nominated by a member of YASOA, whether it was a graduate student or a faculty member, people whose work we've gotten to know through our various disciplines. So that was how the group came together. There are different ways that this volume is unique, but I think one of the most important features of this volume is that it's written with a very intentional purpose of introducing those who are new to the field or those who seek to expand their understanding of childhood and youth studies. So we've tried to make sure that all of the chapters are very accessible. Each chapter, for example, has a glossary of terms that we, the editors, or two doctoral students who are helping us with the editing deemed potentially difficult for maybe upper-level undergraduates or new graduate students. Each chapter also has discussion questions that not only zoom in on the content of one particular chapter, but help readers look across chapters. And then the three editors, MJ Maines and Deborah Levinson and I, have worked hard to make sure that the chapters cohere and that where appropriate, authors are referencing other chapters in the volume. So it's not a collection of discrete chapters, although they could be read that way. Rather, it is a whole. It is an edited volume that was put together with a great degree of intentionality.
Thank you for talking about that collection. I know as someone who was part of that process, you were also really intentional in putting the book together, and you organized workshops, and we were able to sit together and provide early feedback, but then also hear about how others were approaching their scholarship and thinking about how that even influenced our own chapters. So, you know, that was a really fantastic part of this collection as well. You've already addressed a little bit who you wrote this book for, but I'm curious, as you envision someone sitting down and reading this or using this, who do you really have in mind for that?
Yeah, so I would say we have two primary audiences in mind. One, as I mentioned earlier, would be, you know, upper level undergraduates who might be in courses where one or two chapters might be used in a class. So there might be a class in history, for example, where the chapters that look at histories of childhood in different periods might be used. But we also hope that the entire book will be read in maybe graduate seminars where the focus is on the field of childhood and youth studies. We also would anticipate that scholars who are moving into the area of childhood and youth studies might find the book helpful for them, both in terms of the content and the methodologies represented. We have some chapters that describe multi-country collaborative projects. We have chapters that describe using archives, such as your chapter, Beth, which is an excellent examination of childhood in colonial Uganda. So we also take on in some chapters ethical issues involving research with children. The chapter that Deborah Levinson and Anna Bolgren and I wrote that brought together our various projects in Tanzania talked about, you know, children's rights and how to respect those when doing quantitative or mixed methods or qualitative research. So both undergraduate students, graduate students, and scholars who are either newer to this field or who are looking for new directions methodologically. I think those would be our primary audiences, though we hope anyone interested in children and youth would explore the volume as well.
Welcome back. In this next section, you'll hear from some of the chapter authors from the book Children and Youth as Subjects, Objects, Agents, Innovative Approaches to Research Across Time and Space, and edited by Fran Vavrist, whom you heard in the previous interview, as well as MJ Maines and Deborah Levinson. Here, we'll be focusing on some of the chapters included in this edited volume, and the authors will describe their own backgrounds, how they got involved with the Yasowa Project, and what they've learned through those experiences. The book itself is organized into three sections: youth as subject, youth as object, youth as agent, and we'll be highlighting a few chapters from each of those. From subject, you'll hear from Elena Alberon, from her chapter, So How's Your Childhood Going? A historian of childhood confronts her own archive. And you'll also hear from Judith Josephette Marino and Laura Wangsness Willemson from their chapter, Turning Off the Recorder, Caring Relationships in Research with Youth. From Object, you'll hear from Kelly Condit Sresta from her chapter, Archives, Adoption Records, and Owning Historical Memory. And from Agent, you'll hear from Lauren Heidbrink and Michelle Statz from their chapter, Youth Circulations, Tracing the Real and Imagined Circulations of Global Youth.
Children and Youth as Subject.
My participation with this project started with a 2016 invited workshop that I gave at the ICGC on a book project that I was completing. I am a cultural historian of Latin American childhood, and it was wonderful to meet the participants in that workshop. And as a result, my collaborations with the group has, I think, expanded the interdisciplinary, geographical, and temporal scope of our work. I think very few of us are probably trained in childhood studies and instead have come to it as a secondary or thematic focus, branching out from our disciplinary traditions. And sometimes as a result, it's hard to find community outside of these bounds. But through this project, the intellectual partnerships that it has generated in its afterlife, these have created some of the most fulfilling intellectual pursuits that I've had of late. I think as a result of my participation in this group and getting to know its members, I'm a better advisor to my students who are interested in comparative childhood studies because I now have a trusted network of scholars to refer them to that I might not have encountered otherwise.
Memoranda. What is a memoranda? Probably it has something to do with something you never want to forget, so you write it down.
My contribution to the volume is a methodological experiment. It's called So How's Your Childhood Going? A Historian Confronts Her Own Archive. And in that chapter, I raise questions about the reliability of sources, both text and memory, and the work that the historian must do to mitigate the self-censorship that both of these forms of sources can generate, even when the historian herself is the original author, as was the case for me. So I analyzed my own childhood diaries to my great chagrin throughout the project. And by bringing my own written childhood into conversation with my memory of my childhood, I thought that I would ideally match those two halves together and complete the quest for complete knowledge of the subject that eludes every historian, but my memory and my text both proved faulty.
Tuesday, January 28, 1986. Dear Diary, today we had school. At school, before lunch, we saw on TV Krista McAuliffe and other astronauts get on board the space shuttle. After 1 minute, we watched it in the sky. Suddenly, it blew up. All the people must have died. It was a terrible explosion. There was a big thing about it all day.
When I compared my childhood experiences, or what I thought was trauma, or privilege, or sorrow, or boredom, or friendship, with similar experiences of my peers in the Cold War period that I study in my professional life, I became aware of the much larger geopolitical forces that shaped my quotidian world, which is something that I could only have come to appreciate now through comparative study.
Friday, January 31st, 1986. Dear Diary, since I haven't had room so far, I will tell you about how I feel about the explosion. I feel strange seeing reruns with her talking and saying that she would be safe. She wasn't. Anyway, today I got my report card. It was in this order. A minus, A minus, not applicable, A minus, S.
I think that my experiences writing that particular text and contribution to the volume have only been enhanced by the very intentionally interdisciplinary, regional, trans-temporal scholarship that we've done together through our collaboration in this volume. And I'm really grateful for the ways that it has made me grow in my understanding of childhood studies.
Now you will hear from authors of another chapter on youth as subjects.
Hi, my name is Judith Mourinho. I work in the NGO industry in Tanzania, dealing with youth development, but I've also worked for many years with the University of Minnesota researching as a researcher, researching on young girls, education, and life in general.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Laura Wangsness-Willemsen, and I am an assistant professor of education at Concordia University in St. Paul, Minnesota. And I am one of the, at the time I was a graduate student, one of the early members of the Yasoa Research Circle. And the research that Judith just mentioned, I was a part of in Tanzania for years. And then Judith and I worked together to do my dissertation research with seven young women in rural Tanzania, focusing on their transition from high school to adulthood. And that experience forms the basis of our chapter.
What we discuss in our chapter is that the knowledge that we get from research with young people cannot be separated from research relationships. Relationships shapes knowledge, and the knowledge shapes relationships. These two are interconnected.
And then we go on to call for increased mutuality in research, research with young people in particular, mutuality both within larger systems of knowledge production. And here we point out historical and current injustices and inequalities within knowledge production systems of the global north and the global south. And we call for increased mutuality interpersonally. And Judith and I share interpersonal stories and reflections about both our relationship between us as researchers and friends and between our relationships with our participants, the young women with whom we were really fortunate to accompany in their some big life transitions, including their transitions to adulthood.
That's so true, Laura. Do you remember that one day that we went to visit one of our research participant who was a young mother, and I was pregnant at the time, if you remember, and we are all mothers, but we spent almost the whole day together and we discussed first just being a mother, her being a young mother, and me being pregnant for my first child, and counseling me through the process because there are things that were scaring me at that point. And our point there is, for us, we are a human being first. And we are also mothers first at that point. So we discussed about what was going on in our lives at that point. And then we were researchers And we spoke about what we wanted to, the information that we were looking for to getting from her. And that's the whole point about our chapter.
Yeah, we really highlight how centering caring relationships enables deeper research. And we also talk, back to the story of that day, we also talk about how we learned new things about that participant because of that very, I would say, care-centered, just being together, connecting time that likely we wouldn't have learned had we not prioritized caring for each other first. And we go on to talk about how later when we were publishing, she came back and told us, you know, some of this I want in and some of this I don't want in, and into the final publication. And so really what we're trying to do is say youth, our youth participants really, we hope, had agency throughout the whole entire research process, and that agency continues beyond. So, and that all is rooted in really relationships of very intentional care. So thank you, Judith, for always reminding me and the rest of us that mutuality and caring really need to be at the heart of research with young people.
I hope our readers will be encouraged to be vulnerable, authentic, caring, while doing research with young people. Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you, Judith.
Children and youth as object.
Hi, my name is Kelly Condit-Tresta, and I received my PhD from the Department of History at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities and specialize in transnational U.S. migration, childhood, adoption, and critical race studies. I'm also an adopted Korean American. I got involved in the Yaswa Collaborative by way of MJ Mains. I was able to reconnect with MJ, one of the co-editors of the book, co-leaders in Yaswa, and a professor in UMN's history department, just as I was finishing my PhD, and she introduced me to the Yaswa Research Circle, which, as everyone is saying, is made up of generous and good people and generative and inspiring research on childhood and youth studies. Besides the book, through the intellectual partnerships that I made, I'll just highlight a few. Attending the International Studies Association conference with Karen Brown, engaging with the Society for the History of Childhood Studies with Elena Albaran, Emily Bruce, and Elizabeth Dillenberg, collaborating with Lauren Heidbrink and Michelle Statz on their curated multimedia digital archive use circulations, and MJ and Elizabeth Dillenberg were critical in my organization of a symposium for the Immigration History Research Center, Migration Across Global Regimes of Childhood. This is all to say that my work and my life have been profoundly enriched through this collective. Back to the book, my chapter contribution, Archives, Adoption Records, and Owning Historical Memory, focuses on transnationally adopted Korean American youth, so the children who are internationally adopted from South Korea to the United States. And speaking to the thematics that organize this book, the tensions that exist whether adopted Korean Americans are positioned as objects, as they're documented in their adoption files by agency officials, for example, or positioned as agents attempting a search for birth family, for example. One of the most specific ways that being part of this interdisciplinary project influenced my scholarship is evident through the chapter's framing and methodology. For my chapter, I conducted in-depth interviews with two Korean adoptees, one woman who was adopted in the late 1950s to the East Coast, USA, and one man who was adopted in the early 2000s to the American Midwest, as well as an adoption agency and separately a historical archives official. I conducted these interviews and pursued my analyses through a sort of fieldwork approach, filtered through my experiences as a Korean adoptee in touch with other adoptees, as someone who has had personal and professional interactions with domestic and international adoption agencies, and as a scholar and researcher who has worked with other scholars, researchers, and archivists, many of whom were not adopted and yet had access to adoptees' personal files. In early graduate school, as an historian in training, I think my mentors intentionally guided me away from ethnography and this natural urge that I had toward explicit self-reflection, to focus on the archival and historical training that I needed. But with this interdisciplinary project, couched and influenced by the anthropological, partnership, and ethnographic work so many of my colleagues in the collective were doing, as well as the huge geographic scope and scale of much of their work, this helped me to balance thinking about Korean adoption in a global system sense, while also empowering me to go the route of interviews and self-reflection, all while interrogating my own discipline and the construction of the archive. Here, hats off again to MJ Means, who's been doing this type of interrogation for quite a while. Ultimately, it was only through this interdisciplinary study of adopted Korean American childhood and youth that I was able to intersect the comparative nexuses of discourse and experience regarding Korean adoptees as simultaneous subjects, objects, and agents in the Korean adoption process. In conclusion, I am so very thankful to be included as part of this edited collection and for the friendships and collegial relations that I've made. So thank you very, very much.
Children and youth as agent.
Welcome. My name is Lauren Heidbrink, and I'm an anthropologist, associate professor at California State University, Long Beach, and co-founder and editor of Youth Circulations, which is a website that traces the real and imagined circulations of global youth through a curated media archive of the art and writing of immigrant youth, international journalists, and multidisciplinary scholars.
And I'm Michelle Statz. I'm an anthropologist of law, an assistant professor at the University of Minnesota Medical School, and also co-founder and editor of Youth Circulations with Lauren. Today, we want to share a bit about the origins and aims of our website, which we discuss in the edited volume, Youth as Subjects, Objects, and Agents.
So Michelle, to get us started, can you tell us about the origins of the site?
Absolutely. So as anthropologists, we conceptualized Youth Circulations from our joint aspiration to make our research with young migrants more publicly relevant and to create accessible, dynamic resources for ourselves and for others who teach on migration and global youth. And to be completely candid, it was fueled by a frustration we shared at both the reductive depictions of global youth as the victim, the threat, the economic migrant, or the model minority. In my research with Fujinese youth and Lauren's work with Guatemalan youth, we independently observed within the institutions and actors in the U.S. that are tasked with and often celebrated for caring for young unaccompanied migrants. In 2014, when the media and the public's fascination and moral outrage erupted at the influx of unaccompanied minors at the U.S.-Mexico border, the project took on greater urgency.
And over time, we've curated a series of galleries identifying and challenging these reductive tropes. And I think what continues to strike me even more so now is that the images of migrant children and their families serve a function, right? They provoke public outrage, they incite empathy, and they sell. It's crass, but it's a legitimate interpretation of what's happening here.
It's child migration as clickbait.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the most part, the images allow us to avoid or to ignore the more pernicious realities of U.S. foreign intervention in Central America, lopsided free trade agreements, the erosion of asylum protections worldwide, the proliferation of private for-profit immigration detention, or even how non-governmental organizations are profiting from the detention of unaccompanied minors. So Youth Circulation is committed to dismantling this distracted outrage and novelty of these realities. So Michelle, can you give us an example from your research with Fujinese youth who migrate from China to the US?
Absolutely. So we're all pretty familiar with the victim narrative, where the strategy is to characterize these people who structurally have less access to power, often children of color, as victims. When you focus on this child victim, all of the power is taken from the child themselves and placed in the hands of advocates, these people who ostensibly give voice to the victimized. My research with immigration attorneys examines how children become a moral cause, and in the process, how they are powerfully ignored in how they make decisions and how those decisions are influenced by this whole host of factors and relationships. It just effectively decontextualizes all of the conditions that spur migration and instead focuses on the individual victim. And then we are left with centralized victimhood instead of the structures that create and benefit from victimhood. Lauren, can you tell us more about the counter narratives that Youth Circulation seeks to offer and what makes them so essential?
So we're now in our seventh year, and I think we've published about 120 really visually striking and geographically diverse analyses of global youth's place in and experiences of a broad range of topics: labor, legality, home, memory, education, statelessness, architectural design, medicalization, literacy, among many other topics. And contributions come from young people, from researchers and artists and activists. And throughout this range of contributions, young migrants are consistently understood and self-represent as complex, agentive, skilled, creative, and relational actors. And as experts of their lived experiences, youth are critically and dynamically equipped to reflect on the varied structures, institutions, discourses, and social forces that shape their everyday realities and the communities where they live. And so in contrast to the disparaging ways that young people, particularly young people of color, are discussed, we enlist an asset-based approach that resolutely affirms young people's resources and skills as they meaningfully negotiate and in the process shed light on local and intersecting realities of inequality, of legality, and of belonging.
And again, we keep finding young migrants as agentive and skilled and creative transnational actors who are steadily shaping and contributing to communities both here in the U.S. and in their home countries. By facilitating the explicit recognition and regard for youth's lived experiences, Youth Circulations effectively democratizes expertise. That is, it enables us as scholars of youth to harness our privilege and platform to advance the unmediated voices, critiques, and causes of young people. In so doing, youth demonstrate their capacities and concerns not only to an expansive public, but also to community leaders and policymakers.
And if we're really committed to introduce and value these counter-narratives about and by global youth, then we have no option but to rethink current policies and practices that claim to serve them. So only when we recognize young migrants as experts in their own lives and create opportunities to meaningfully involve them in discussions of policies and institutional practices, only then will we see meaningful change.
As we discuss in our chapter in this volume, as researchers, we have to be more expansive in the ways that we communicate. We need to develop relationships with reporters and policymakers, and we need to enlist diverse multimedia formats such as Youth Circulations, so that together we can reach a broader and more diverse public with more contextualized and historical analysis. And this comes full circle because it's one of the primary purposes of the site, namely to meet a demand for nuanced and accessible analysis that really centers the voices, perspectives, and experiences of young people themselves.
So we invite you to take a look at www.youthcirculations.com. Thank you.
Welcome back. So Fran and Karen, one of the things I really appreciated about the YesOA group and this book is how generative it's been, which a lot of the chapter authors we've just heard from have highlighted. What other projects or collaborations have grown out of this group over the past, 7 years at this point, 8 years?
Yes, it's remarkable to think about sustaining a group for that length of time, but I think it speaks to both the interest in childhood and youth studies and the importance of building relationships that are across disciplines and intergenerational. So some of the ways that we've continued to keep the group vibrant is by having workshops where doctoral students or faculty can present works in progress, such as drafts of dissertation chapters or conference presentations or even grants. One of our doctoral students who had workshopped a grant last semester just received a travel grant. So we're very happy that that we were able to provide feedback that helped her, I think, to become successful in that endeavor. We want to continue to have what we call writing hunkers. So we did this several times during the past couple of years, where at the beginning of the fall and winter semesters, we would gather for quiet writing time in the same room, but then break into discussion over lunch or over coffee so that people could get feedback on whatever it was that they were writing. So I think we want to continue that because it's a good way to block off 2 days to devote to a writing project. Another way that we've collaborated is one of the chapters in the book focuses on a really fascinating blog called Youth Circulations, written by or featuring piece written by youth who are immigrants, refugees, youth on the move, and scholars who examine the movement of young people. So several of the contributors to this book have also contributed to the blog. So those are some of the most important ways that we have seen the collaboration continue and continue to grow in new directions.
I know one of my favorite parts of this group, or kind of on the peripheral, but we've had a series of summer book clubs and have fell into a pattern of reading a lot of fiction, which has actually been really interesting, focused on, of course, children and youth in the Global South. So beyond what you've already, what's already come out of this book, I'm curious what other future plans you might have that will build on this or continue to build on this work that has happened already.
Thank you for mentioning the summer book clubs, because that has been an unusual part of this collaboration. This is an informal opportunity for people to gather at the home of one of the members of the group for wine and dessert. Well, we talk about a book, mostly fiction. I think almost all of them have been fiction or graphic novels that are based on a young person's life or reflecting on a young person's life. So I think that we would like to continue to have summer book clubs, because it does bring together different generations of scholars, and it's a way for us to read work that might not be on our reading list for classes, that because those are tend to be more empirical pieces. We also hope to have a mini conference at the University of Minnesota within the next year and a half, which would include some scholars whom we have not been able to invite yet, or people who contributed to the book who are now living in other places, but really kind of a culminating event for this particular phase of the collaborative research circle. So look for information about that. At the earliest, I imagine it would be next spring, so spring of 2022, or even, you know, fall of 2022, depending on what lies before us due to the pandemic. And I want to say that we are encouraging and helping to put together panels at conferences where the book would be available from the publisher, but also the panels would be an opportunity for people who are interested to listen to the contributors speak about their work. And ideally, this would lead to conferences or panels with contributors to the volume and newer scholars who have become part of the collaborative research circle.
Well, we'll have to look for those in some upcoming conferences. Hopefully we'll be able to travel and see one another in person soon. I'm curious, kind of to close our time today, what's one piece of advice that you would give to other folks who might want to pursue similar collaborations, similar edited volumes? What have you learned from this experience?
I can speak to that question from the perspective of ICGC. So one aspect of our work is to convene and support interdisciplinary collaboration on global issues like the children's research circle that we're talking about here today. And we have many of those collaborations at ICGC. So I have a few thoughts about what works well and a lot of these things. So I think one lesson that we've learned over time is that interdisciplinarity and interdisciplinary collaboration is something that takes time. It takes time and it takes a common purpose and an openness to other ways of knowing. And I think we've really seen this in the group that produced this volume, with people from across so many different disciplines and fields of study and approaches who really were able to find common ground and work productively together. I think the other thing I'd mention is that intergenerational projects like this volume and like this research circle take a real partnership between more senior scholars and emerging scholars, as I mentioned earlier. And we saw that here with the mentoring, the collaboration on research and writing, and the other activities that Fran has mentioned that the circle has taken on over the years. So I think really taking the time and having the openness to those kinds of collaborations across various boundaries has really been crucial.
I completely agree with what Karen has said. And I think I would just want to reinforce the point that working on a volume as a process of building relationships is very important. This is the third edited book that I've done over the years. And in each case, the contributors knew one another quite well. And that means that we could take more intellectual risks in sharing first drafts or early drafts of our work. We could give constructive criticism, knowing that the others in the group have our best interests in mind. And it's a way of holding one another accountable. Sometimes edited books are very difficult to put together because people don't meet deadlines or they get caught up in other activities. But when folks know one another, it's much easier to make sure that we are able to remain accountable to the whole so that the volume is actually completed. And I think building activities to ensure that happens, such as the writing workshops, is a good piece of advice to share with others.
Well, thank you both for being here. It was great to hear from you. And I even learned a few new things about the book and the kind of the behind the scenes process. It's been such a pleasure. I know many folks who were part of the book and Yasso over the years have found it to be such a great intellectual home in some places and finding commonality with other people who are interested in researching children and youth. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to our audience as well for joining us. If you'd like to learn more about the Yasowa Collaborative and some of the author's work who is featured here today, we'd love for you to check out a copy of the book, Children and Youth as Subjects, Objects, Agents, Innovative Approaches to Research Across Time and Space, which is being published by Palgrave Macmillan and is available in April of 2021. A link to the book's website is available on the CCYSC podcast website, along with bios for each of our contributors. Thank you for joining us. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Lefebvre and Emily Markovich Morris and edited by Rafael Flores. Original music was performed and produced by Emily Markovich Morris and Tabu Zawesi. The special thanks to the co-editors of this edited volume, Deborah Levinson, MJ Maines, and Frances Favris, and to the authors featured on this podcast. Other authors from the volume include Emily Bruce, MJ Maines, Joan DeJager, Samia Khatun, Elizabeth Lefebvre, Tammy Owens, Karen Brown, Jessica Taft, Emily Markovich Morris, Anna Bulgren, Deborah Levinson, and Frances Favris. For more information about this book, Children and Youth as Subjects, Objects, Agents, Innovative Approaches to Research Across Time and Space, please visit the Palgrave Macmillan website. Finally, special thanks to Elizabeth Dillenberg, our host, and to CCYSC AWAS for the chance to highlight this work.